Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
This episode contains distressing themes and descriptions of sexual violence. This podcast is intended for a mature audience. Listener caution is advised. To hear ad-free versions of our episodes published several days before their general release, subscribe to They Walk Among Us Plus. Head to patreon.com/ They Walk Among Us or search for They Walk Among Us on Apple Podcasts to learn more.
Leslie Molseed was sent on an errand to the local shops to buy a loaf of bread. Her mother thought it was safe, but Leslie Molseed never made it to the shops, and she never made it home either. It was the last time her mother ever saw her alive.
It was a cruel and a lonely end when Leslie's body was found on the moors, assaulted and stabbed to death. The town where she lived demanded someone had to pay.
A few days later, detectives called at the home of Stefan Kishko in Rochdale and arrested him. They closed their files when he was convicted.
There were clues at the scene, but the forensic scientists of the day weren't able to take those clues and turn them into a trail of forensic evidence. If they'd done that, they might have avoided the worst miscarriage of justice that this part of the world has ever seen.
After serving 16 years in prison for a crime he did not commit, Stefan Kishko was acquitted and released. He died less than 2 years later. Leslie Molseed's killer was still unidentified, but as so much time had passed, there was little chance the murderer would ever be brought to justice, especially after most of the evidence had been destroyed. Welcome to Season 8, Episode 19 of They Walk Among Us, a podcast dedicated to UK true crime. Please listen to Season 8, Episode 18 for Part 1 of this two-part case. Following Stefan Kishko's release and premature death, the investigation into Leslie Molseed's murder was reopened. For some time, the police suspected that Leslie's stepfather Danny was involved. Before Stefan was acquitted, Danny had been arrested and questioned in connection with the killing but was released without charge. Around the same time as Stefan's successful appeal, Danny Molseed was brought to court where he pleaded guilty to 3 charges of sexual abuse against his stepson Freddie between August 1976 and August 1979. Freddie was 13 when the abuse began, and it lasted until he was 16. The abuse had only come to light after Danny Molseed's arrest the previous year. The court heard that Danny had gone into turmoil following Leslie's murder and began drinking heavily and taking Valium. Danny Molseed was sentenced to 2 years of probation and ordered to attend a sex abusers clinic. 5 years later, in 1997, a book titled Innocence was released, written by Jonathan Rose, with the help of former police officer Trevor Wilkinson and journalist Steve Panter. It named a new potential suspect, Raymond Hewlett. Hewlett had been questioned in relation to the murder in 1992, but the CPS decided that there was not enough evidence to proceed with the case. Hewlett, who lived 10 miles from Rochdale, had a number of previous convictions. In 1972, then aged 27, he had abducted and sexually assaulted a 12-year-old neighbour. Hewlett was sentenced to 18 months in prison, but was released after being behind bars for just a year. In 1978, he sexually assaulted a 14-year-old at her home while holding her at gunpoint. Hewlett received a 4-year sentence but only served 16 months. A decade later, on January 1, 1988, Raymond Hewlett kidnapped another 14-year-old who was delivering newspapers in Northwich, Cheshire. He took the girl to a quarry in North Wales, over 50 miles away, where she was sexually assaulted. Hewlett was described by a judge as being highly dangerous. He was sentenced to 6 years in prison. Hewlett had just finished serving 4 years of that sentence when he was questioned concerning Leslie Molseed's murder. The authors of Innocence wrote that Hewlett had admitted to prison inmates that he was responsible. Hewlett had convinced a girl to provide him with a false alibi for the time of the killing when he was initially questioned in 1975. The girl later retracted the alibi, but Hewlett was never considered a suspect again once the police spoke with Stefan Kishko. Because Stefan had two failed appeals, the exhibits from the case were destroyed in 1985, meaning there was very little evidence left to be tested during the reinvestigation in the early 90s. Detective Chief Superintendent Max McLean with the West Yorkshire Police was tasked with leading the review. In 1999, the conviction that Hewlett was Leslie's killer was so strong that her family attempted to proceed with a private prosecution against him, but Hewlett was missing. It was believed that he had fled the UK and was hiding out under a false name in Ireland. In 2001, Hewlett was placed on Britain's most wanted list, and Interpol was asked to assist in finding him. DCS McLean said at the time, "Our inquiries can go no further until we trace this man. I'm not saying he is guilty of the killing, but it is vital that we trace him and question him. He is known to have been a fairground worker and had also worked as a trawlerman. He has a passport and we know he has friends all over Europe. He also has a child on the continent from an association over there. This man has been married and has 4 or 5 children we know of, but his family want nothing to do with him. From new information we have received, we have the names of 3 potential suspects, 2 of them we have interviewed, but the vital key is in tracing Hewlett and speaking to him. He was considered a suspect right from the beginning, but then we had the conviction of Stefan Kishko, a wrongful conviction as it turned out. To say we need to trace this man is an understatement. It is vital to our inquiries and we need the public's help. I'm determined to finalise this inquiry for Leslie's sake. And we know he has connections in Europe. We don't believe he's in the UK. And we'll travel anywhere to talk to him." after 26 years in 2001. The murder investigation was ramped up. A team of investigators based at a dedicated incident room at West Yorkshire CID went through all of the original statements in an attempt to find clues the detectives had missed in 1975. One of the only remaining pieces of evidence was a section of adhesive tape that had been rolled across Leslie's clothing during the original investigation. It was thought that the killer would never be found, but advancements in forensic technology meant that even after 3 decades, one piece of evidence was all that it would take to break the case wide open.
The breakthrough came after scientists here had been working to refine their DNA profiling test, specifically to examine the small amount of evidence that's still available in this case. Since the discovery, the police have been widening their search, and for Leslie Molseed's family, that's brought new hope.
We now have this wonderful opportunity in relation to the DNA profile. If we can find the match to that, we will catch Leslie's killer.
It's a significant breakthrough, but what the scientists have found here could be a major step forward in solving a murder case which led to one of the most famous miscarriages of justice.
In 2003, Detective Chief Superintendent McLean announced that a full DNA profile had been obtained. It was incredible news, but it also caused further confusion for Leslie's family as the DNA cleared the only suspect, Raymond Hewlett. DCS McLean said, "Raymond Hewlett has been named as a suspect in the past, but I can categorically state that he is not the killer. He does not match the DNA profile we have." The DNA did, however, conclusively prove that Stefan Kishko had been innocent all along. Despite most of the evidence being destroyed in 1985, a single strip of adhesive that had been rolled over Leslie's underwear to lift any fibres had been rolled over a semen stain. In 1999, analysts from Weatherby Forensic Science Services Lab were able to use low copy number typing, a technique that extracts DNA profiles from small samples. Experts obtained a full profile of Leslie Molseed, and from sperm heads found on the adhesive taping, they extracted the DNA of an unknown male. McLean said, "This is the biggest breakthrough in this inquiry to date. We will never have a better opportunity to crack this case than we do now. It may be that someone has harboured a suspicion for 27 years that a friend, relative or acquaintance could have killed this little girl. We now have the ability through the development of scientific methods to eliminate these people once and for all. It is an extremely simple procedure, which involves us taking a mouth swab. We have already eliminated 300 people and are continuing to work through our list of suspects. It could be a husband, boyfriend, partner, or brother. There are simple scientific tests we can undertake to determine whether they are responsible for her death. I want to stress to people that it is impossible for Stefan Kishko to have been involved in this crime. Get the image out of your mind. He was not the killer. This is a murder inquiry that West Yorkshire Police are desperate to solve. We know we have got it wrong in the past, and we would dearly love to put that right both for the Molseed family and the memory of Stefan Kishko." By the time Leslie Molseed should have been turning 40 years old in 2004, the police had eliminated over 1,000 people from the inquiry through comparative DNA testing, but the identity of the killer still remained a puzzle yet to be solved. 7 months before the 30th anniversary of Leslie's murder, a family were dealt another devastating blow. In March 2005, Leslie's older brother Freddie was found dead in his home with self-inflicted knife wounds to his neck. He left behind his wife and three children aged between 3 and 11 years old. Freddie, along with his parents Fred and April and his sisters Laura and Julie, had campaigned to keep Leslie's case in the public eye since Stephen Kishko's acquittal in 1992. At the inquest into his death, his wife Deborah explained that Freddie would become depressed each year as the anniversary of Leslie's death approached, and he had also been dealing with complex trauma from his past. Months later, his mother April spoke publicly for the first time in years, recalling the type of person Freddie was, and describing how much she missed her son and daughter. He and Leslie were very close as children. Now they are together again. He was such a lovely boy, always considerate, a real gentleman. He would visit me with flowers and chocolates, and we'd sit and watch a video together. He used to run marathons. We were very proud of him. At that point, April was in remission from cancer and feared it would be the final time she could appeal to the public to help her solve her daughter's murder. What can I say to people that hasn't been said before? Only that I ask them to think back to see if there is anything they have overlooked or previously thought unimportant. And if there is, ask them to come forward. It could be the final piece of information that slots everything else together. I'm just hoping that someone somewhere will remember something. Detective Chief Superintendent Max McLean was still leading the inquiry and spoke about the importance of passing information to the police. It's a 30-year murder inquiry, and we are approaching our last chance to catch and convict the killer. For all the advances in DNA evidence, IT and forensic science, there is nothing like a tip-off from the public to help identify a suspect. McLean believed the killer must have kept out of trouble following Leslie Mulseed's murder because their profile was not on the National DNA database. Just days later, a profile taken during a routine swab following an arrest was uploaded into the database. But a whole year would pass before the sample taken from Leslie Mulseed's underwear was compared again. In November 2006, the samples were run through the National DNA database and the investigators found a match to the unknown male. The profile corresponded to 54-year-old Ronald Castry, a local man who had been in his early 20s in 1975. He lived less than a mile from Leslie's home at the time of her murder. Castry had been born and raised in Rochdale. After completing a private school education in 1973 when he was 19, he married an 18-year-old called Beverly. Castry had worked as a taxi driver in the mid-1970s, and in September 1975, the couple had their first child. The baby boy was believed to have been born during a brief breakup. A few weeks later, on October 3rd, Beverly and the little boy were admitted back to the hospital. Leslie Mulseed was abducted and killed 2 days later. In 1976, 4 days before Stephen Kishko's trial began at Leeds Crown Court, Castry abducted a 9-year-old girl and took her to another location where he sexually assaulted her. The girl had attended the same school as Leslie, and luckily she had been able to escape and report what had happened to her mother. She had been playing with a friend when a red taxi pulled up and the driver walked over. Her friend had run away, but the driver grabbed the girl and pulled her into his car before driving off. After she escaped and her mother alerted the police, the little girl bravely identified Castree as her attacker. On July 12, 1976, at Rochdale Magistrates Court, Ronald Castree pleaded guilty to indecent assault and incitement to commit an act of gross indecency. He was fined £25 and released. 2 years later, Castree was back in the magistrate's court where he was convicted of assaulting a 9-year-old. He had forced the young boy to strip before striking his bare buttocks. Despite the nature of the assault, Castree was not convicted of a sexual offence and was fined just £50. Castree went on to have 2 more sons with his wife, Beverly. Throughout the years that followed, he routinely beat and berated his partner and children, and also had multiple affairs. He opened 2 comic book stores in the 1990s, but later changed to selling products over the internet. In the mid-1990s, Castree and Beverly divorced, and Castree remarried a woman with 5 young children. He was still married to her at the time of his arrest in October 2005, after being accused of rape by a sex worker. Castree was not prosecuted, but his DNA was taken and entered into the national DNA database, as was routine following an arrest. When his profile was found to be a 1-in-a-billion match against the sample found on Leslie Mulseed's underwear the following year, the police believed they had finally located her killer. On November 5th, 2006, investigators went to Ronald Castree's home.
Ronald, I'm DC 1762 Jeff Dunn from West Yorkshire Police.
Yeah.
I just warn you now that everything that we say is being tape recorded.
I'm not recorded, just dying on.
Right.
What's going on?
Are you Ronald Charles Edward Castree?
I am.
Right, listen very carefully to what I've got to say to you now. You were under arrest for the murder of Leslie Susan Mulseed.
You're joking.
Between 12 noon on Sunday, the 5th of October 1975, and 06:45 a.m. on Wednesday, the 8th of October 1975. You do not have to say anything, but it may harm your defence if you do not mention, when questioned, something which you later rely on in court. Anything you do say may be given in evidence. Do you understand the caution?
Yes, I understand the caution.
Your arrest is necessary for the prompt and effective investigation of the offence.
Right.
Okay, you're going to be taken from here to Halifax Police Station now.
It's ridiculous.
When Castree was questioned at Halifax Police Station, he told the officers that he had been expecting to be arrested for the crime for some time. He explained that he had been threatened about the murder years before. Castree claimed that he had reported a theft in 1979, and when the police suspected he was lying, he was assaulted. Allegedly, the officers threatened to pin Leslie's murder on him. Castree adamantly denied any involvement in Leslie's abduction and murder, and said he could not understand how his DNA recovered from a semen sample was found on her clothing.
Yeah, I have no knowledge, and I've certainly never met this dead girl or any member of her family. And I have no knowledge as to how you come to say a sample of my DNA is found at that place, especially after 30 years.
Ronald Castree was charged with Leslie Mulseed's murder the following day, and later pleaded not guilty to the offence.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The trial began at Bradford Crown Court on October 23, 2007. Opening for the Crown, Julian Goose QC told the jury. The 1975 investigation by the police led to a man known as Stefan Kishko. Ladies and gentlemen, some of you may recall the name of Stefan Kishko. He served over 16 years in prison for a crime he did not commit. The court heard that DNA testing in recent years had completely exonerated Stefan. The prosecutor said, "The man who carried out those acts had a sexual interest in very young girls, and in a violent rage killed Leslie Molseed in a frenzied attack with a knife. That man was definitely not Stefan Kishko." The prosecution says it was the defendant Ronald Castree who abducted, sexually assaulted and then murdered Leslie Molseed. Julian Goose QC explained that a semen stain found on an adhesive rolling taken from Leslie's clothing was an exact DNA match to Ronald Castree, who was 22 years old at the time of the offence. There was only a 1 in a billion chance that it came from someone else. The prosecutor explained, "The police in the 1970s did not have the benefit that we now have of obtaining DNA profiles for comparison to help to identify the perpetrator of a crime. Their efforts were confined to attempts in the recovery of fibers, as well as attempting to discover a blood group from semen stains." The court heard that Castree had been convicted of sexually assaulting a 9-year-old girl in 1976, which the prosecution argued showed his propensity for being a violent predator. Julian Goose QC told the jury that the offence was eerily similar to Leslie Molseed's murder. The victim lived just 10 minutes from Leslie's home, was the same height and weight, attended the same specialist school as Leslie, and they both had learning difficulties. Recalling Castree's statement following his arrest, the prosecutor went on to say, "What the defendant said to the police when he was arrested in November 2006 was because he was expecting the police to go to him, not because of any previous threats, but because he knew that the police had finally arrested the murderer of Leslie Molseed. His story in police interview about being threatened with being charged with the murder was as illogical and absurd as it was false." Leslie's mother, April, testified about the events of October 5, 1975, when she asked her youngest daughter to go to the shop. She described Leslie as a dainty and enchanting little darling who was full of life. A smile passed across April's face as she recalled how Leslie had worn her sister's Bay City roller socks to the shop that afternoon. On the second day of testimony, Professor Christopher Milroy, a senior forensic pathologist, went through the medical evidence in the case. The pathologist who had conducted the post-mortem in 1975 had since passed away, but Professor Milroy had reviewed his report and presented it to the jury. The expert witness said that Leslie had been killed on the moors where her body was later found. The cause of death had been multiple stab wounds. The weapon had pierced Leslie's heart, aorta, and left lung. The wounds had been inflicted with severe force with a knife measuring around 2.5 inches long. Tom Butterworth and Robert Collins, two police officers whom Castry had accused of assaulting and threatening him in 1979, then testified. They denied telling Castry, "You've got previous for fiddling with a young girl. We'll fit you up for the Molsey job." Castry's barrister Rodney Jameson QC suggested they had punched Castry in the stomach multiple times and threatened him, indicating that they could charge him with killing Leslie Molsey. The court also heard from Ronald Outeridge, the forensic scientist who had been involved in the original investigation in 1975. Outeridge told the court that he could not say for certain that whoever had ejaculated onto Leslie's underwear was the same person who had killed her. Outeridge told the court, "To do that, it would be necessary to prove that the semen was deposited during the murder of the little girl, and I found no evidence to show that was the case. It might have been, it might not." Outeridge agreed with the defence's suggestion that the semen may have transferred onto Leslie's underwear through other means, such as an unconnected sexual assault or sitting on a taxi seat where someone had sex. Dr. Gemma Escott, the forensic expert who had examined the semen sample obtained from the adhesive tape taken from Leslie's underwear, testified that she had identified a full profile and found a direct match to Castry's DNA. Dr. Escott said, "The probability of obtaining that profile if the semen did not originate from Ronald Castry is in the order of 1 in 1 billion. Jurors then heard from the victim of Castry's 1976 assault. The woman had just been 9 years old at the time and recalled being abducted by a ginger-haired taxi driver. She was taken to a derelict house where the man masturbated in front of her. After the assault, Castry had allegedly gone home to his wife and said, "You can divorce me now. I've been caught interfering with a little girl." Castry pleaded guilty to the offence and just received a £25 fine. On November 2, 2007, the prosecution finished presenting their case. Ronald Castry's barrister Rodney Jameson QC told the court that it was overwhelmingly probable that someone else had killed Leslie. Jameson argued, "It's not you can't prove it. It's I am innocent. Moreover, we believe that we may be able to tell you who is guilty. We say it is overwhelmingly probable that it is Raymond Hewlett who committed this murder. Throughout his life, he's been a dangerous and violent paedophile." Ronald Castree then took the stand in his own defence. He said that throughout the 20 years he was married to his first wife, Beverly, he had numerous affairs and one-night stands. Castree admitted that his wife knew about the affairs, but they had stayed together until the late 90s for the sake of their children. In closing, the defence urged the jury to consider if there was another way that Castree's semen could have ended up on Leslie's underwear. The jury was sent out to deliberate, and on November 12, 2007, they returned with a 10-2 majority verdict.
Years of uncertainty and a long wait for justice have finally come to an end for the family of Leslie Moleseed. A jury at Bradford Crown Court found Ronald Castree, a 54-year-old comic book dealer from Oldham, guilty of Leslie's murder. As the jury gave its verdict, there were shouts of yes and tears of relief from the public gallery, where Leslie's mother April was sitting surrounded by her family.
The presiding judge, Mr. Justice Openshaw, addressed Castree before sentencing him and said, "This was a truly dreadful crime. Leslie Moleseed was only 11, and she was vulnerable, not just because of her age, but because of her learning difficulty. You left her for dead, went back to Rochdale and carried on with the rest of your life as if nothing had happened. Today, though, your past has caught up with you. You kept quiet whilst an entirely innocent man was arrested, tried, convicted, and sentenced for this murder. He served fully 16 years before his conviction was fully set aside, living only a couple of years after his release before he died. By any standards, this was an exceptionally serious murder. Sentence will be imprisonment for life. I specify you must serve 30 years before the parole board considers you for release. It does not mean you will be released in 30 years' time. It means you will not be released under any circumstances until you have served that time. You are 54. I appreciate the practical effect is that you will spend the rest of your life in prison." As Castree was led from the courtroom, he shouted out, "I didn't do it." His ex-wife and children comforted the Moleseed family, who had graciously accepted that they too were victims of Castree. Speaking outside the courtroom after the verdict, Lead Investigator Detective Chief Superintendent Max McLean said that the West Yorkshire Police had never given up on the investigation, and he was pleased that the case had at last been solved. Quote, "Leslie was abducted and brutally killed. She was taken from the safety of her home and community, subjected to a terrifying and frenzied attack, and then abandoned in the bleakest of resting places. No one deserves the kind of anxiety that Leslie's family has endured over the years, not knowing until now who killed her. My thoughts are with the family who have acted with such dignity, and I am proud to call them partners in this investigation." Leslie's mother also spoke outside of court.
"We are relieved that after so long, our quest for justice for Leslie is now over. It has been a long and harrowing ordeal, and our gratitude to the friends, family, and strangers throughout the world who have given us their support is immense."
April went on to thank the West Yorkshire Police, who she said had been more than the police. They had been friends. So where are we now? Ronald Castry has exhausted his attempts to appeal his conviction and reduce his 30-year sentence. His ex-wife Beverly spoke out following his conviction and described her shock at the depths of Castry's depravity. He was cruel. He was cruel with his mouth and cruel with his fists. He liked to rule everything, liked people to be under the thumb. We will never forget Leslie and never get over what he's done. Ronald Castry victimized so many people. His ex-wife, his children, the children he assaulted, and most of all, Leslie Malseed. Castry also ruined the lives of Leslie's family and allowed Stefan Kishko to remain in prison for 16 years for a crime he did not commit. Leslie's siblings never recovered from her horrific murder. Julie, Laura, and Freddie all suffered from mental illness brought on by the ordeal they went through when they were younger. Leslie's mother, April, was also profoundly impacted by her youngest daughter's death. She never recovered from the shock. April said, "I cannot begin to describe my sorrow. I was truly heartbroken. I would never again feel her hugs and kisses, never see her bouncing through the front door, never listen to all her excited chatter. She would never grow up and get married and have children of her own. Leslie had always talked about how she wanted babies when she grew up." April used alcohol and medication to dull the pain and could never rest without taking sleeping tablets to prevent nightmares. However, she never gave up hope that one day Leslie's killer would be found. April lived out her remaining years in sheltered housing before she died in Spring Hill Hospice in March 2014. Charlotte Kishko never gave up either. She spent 16 years and tens of thousands of pounds trying to prove her son's innocence. Stefan Kishko's case would go down as one of the worst miscarriages of justice in UK history. Even after his release, he was a broken man. A family friend, Charles Turner, said, "There were no threads for Stephen to pick up after his release. He was content at home. He couldn't face the world. He wasn't accustomed to speaking to people. He was known everywhere because of what happened. People tried to sympathize and encourage him, but it seemed to frighten Stefan. He would just sit around the house. He had no interests." After being released, Stefan never recovered. It was the type of lassitude from which he suffered. It must have been very trying for his mum, but she was delighted to be able to care for him. Stefan was diagnosed with XYY syndrome, a condition that meant he was born with an extra Y chromosome, causing him to develop abnormally, both physically and mentally. In recognition of her campaign to overturn her son's wrongful conviction, Charlotte Kishko was named Rochdale Woman of the Year in April 1993, 1 month before her death. A headstone in Rochdale Cemetery reads, "A loving wife and a very devoted mother." Leslie Malseed's mother, April, is buried with her in the same cemetery, next to Leslie's brother, Freddie. Thank you for listening. And special thanks to our patrons for their support. For more information on this episode, please see the show notes or visit our website, theywalkamonguspodcast.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.